Thank you all for coming. Appreciate being here. Our research leader decided that we're coming to a transition in our research, and it's time to move the technology we've been working on from the bale up to the front end of the gin to the seed cotton. And so we thought it'd be helpful to kind of give a recap over where we've been, kind of reflect on what we've learned, and use that as a stepping stone into where we're going. The research principal investigators on this is myself, John Wanier, and Greg Holt. When we first started off, I was tasked when I first got to the gin lab to look at improving the current existing moisture sensors. At that time, what we had basically resistant sensors, and they did a function, but we had issues with accuracy. And as over the years, as we've all moved into moisture restoration systems, we've seen even more increases in errors in that technology. So like most researchers that have an electrical background but not a microwave or RF background, we started looking at lower frequency technology. Since they were looking at resistance and have a strong history in that, we started looking at capacitance. And so we developed some desktop systems with two parallel plates, an insulating box surrounding lint, and we started doing some measurements. And we ran from about 25 kilohertz up to 25 megahertz. And what we found is that the higher frequencies work better, and you got a better response. It was nonlinear, which is okay. But the one thing was is the signals were so low that it was really difficult to get the actual measurement out of this. So it ended up costing, very sensitive instruments to make this measurement. So it probably wasn't suitable for the gin. And so the future path we decided at that point in time was to look at higher frequencies, considering the trend was you got a stronger signal as you went up in frequency. Now, one of the problems with RF, of course, is that radio waves tend to bounce, and they bounce all over the place, and we know we were going into a metal box in a gym with lots of metal equipment. And so the question was, how would an RF sensor even work in an environment like that? So we sat down and we developed an electromagnetic model. And what this model did was it allowed us to gain some insights into potential issues and the system and everything else. And what we have, is this is an antenna right here. This is the bale. This is the radio waves showing them going through the box and then also penetrating a lot of reflections off that front face and going into the atmosphere. Now this is open air, so there's no other reflectors in this model. On this side, this is what happens when you put it inside a metal box. What you end up seeing is that a great deal of energy ends up going around that bale, and it ends up setting up standing waves inside the room. And so at first glance, you look at this and you go, there's no way this is even possible gonna work. let me go. Well, one of the things the model did tell us was if you actually went through and you used it in a closed room, we found that you could, for a particular setup, come up with a calibration for a particular cavity, which was not readily apparent from those initial pictures. So that was kind of a surprise. So it gave us the encouragement to go out to a gin and actually try this technology. And the results were fairly similar. We found out we could get results that would calibrate over a range. It seemed reasonable. But we also realized that we were probably looking at having to have a custom calibration for each and every install based upon the neighboring reflectors and everything else. Based on that, using the FTTD simulation, which is the electromagnetic model we developed, we ran some delay models, and we realized that the model suggests a better way to do this. In the past, if you look at the patent literature, all the microwave research was done was using attenuation, signal loss, to do the actual microwave measurements. The models taught us that you could use actual delay, and delay was actually a better surrogate for measuring the permittivity of the material and the actual moisture content as a surrogate to that permittivity. In doing experimental tests, what we found is there's a very strong correlation with mass as well. Basically, you're counting the number of water molecules. So with the mass moisture content, we found a fairly good relationship between mass moisture content product versus the unwrapped phase, which is a network analyzer measurement. But you can take phase and directly at a particular frequency turn that into time delay. So really what you're looking at is the technology for a constrained bale where you have a fixed weight. You can make a pretty good estimate of moisture content by measuring how long it takes for that signal to propagate through the bale. This is one of the original prototypes. What we used is we realized we couldn't, microwave antennas at that time were extremely expensive. So we started looking into how we were going to fabricate this stuff ourselves. So we ended up making some sheet metal microwave horns as our first attempt. And when we first started doing this, we looked at the literature and we saw that they were exciting these horns with little stub probes. And it worked okay for a single frequency. Problem was that they were very sensitive to how long that probe was, and they would only work at a particular frequency, and you had to mess with them to try and get them to work, and it didn't allow you to do anything but one frequency. So we started looking at other antenna technologies, and then we also started looking at, okay, how are we going to deal with getting rid of this issue of needing a calibration for all this metal for corrections? And so we came up with another technology idea, which is to actually sweep the frequencies. And over here, this is basically a time schematic of the signal that we're passing through. And what we're doing is this is the lower end of the frequency, and let's say this is your signal that's being transmitted. And so we start off at a very low frequency and we ramp up over time to a higher frequency. And then these lines over here are the signal that's being delayed after it's passed through the bale. And what you notice here is that the more it's delayed, the greater the difference in frequency at any one given time. So what that allows you to do is it allows you to mix those two signals together, and your signal, instead of becoming a time delay measurement, becomes a difference in frequency. And having a difference in frequency allows you to filter out a lot of the multipath noise that is propagating off the walls and neighboring machinery. This is, on the left here, is the actual time domain frequency sweep signal. This is a frequency domain chart of that same signal, and what you'll notice is that you have the desired straight path shows up at this particular frequency. Now this will move a little bit with moisture content, but it's fairly stable and it's over here. Your other neighboring reflectors, the room, the ceilings, the machines, they'll show up at a much different frequency and they're easily removed through filtering. Later on, kind of going to the next generation, we started looking at metal bale ties because we realized that, now the problem with metal bale ties is they're so close to the antennas, the multipath can't be removed through that prior technique. So we started looking at time domain techniques that use lots and lots of frequencies. And over here, this is a model without the without bale ties, and this is the source right here, which is putting out RF waves. This is the cotton itself, and it kind of smooths out the waves. And then this is the free space on the other side of the bale where you would put an antenna to receive the signal. And you'll notice that you have very smooth waves propagating through the bale without metal bale ties. But as soon as you, on this side, put the metal bale ties, they all act as little reflectors. And they really start to make those waves ripple. And those ripples show up as a major source of an error or a perturbation in the signal itself. Over here, what we found is that as you pass that bale in front of the antennas, you get a periodic position where that metal bale tie passes in front of the antenna and then moves past it. And what it does is, at for a particular frequency, you get an oscillating signal. Now this particular bale had a linear gradient in moisture, which is why you see an increasing slope from one side to the other. But one of the key points here is to notice is that each frequency sets up with a different phase relationship to the previous one. Now that's important because if you use lots of frequencies, they're self-canceling, which is exactly what we want. And so down here we were able to show that if you use many, many frequencies and you combine their signals together, the actual estimation for a given time delay, you can dramatically improve the response and smooth out that signal. down in here. Moving further, what we want to do, and you know, as you go through this and you start from the beginning, you really don't know the best way to do things. So you start off trying to take cotton samples to figure out whether your instrument's working or not working, and if you're on the right track or not. And as we move through the progression of this, we realized we needed a very accurate way to actually calibrate and test the electronics themselves independently of the, you know, the system itself, because we have multipath and we have all these other issues that are confounding the measurements itself, and so we needed to be able to separate the two. So what we came up with is a set of precision delay lines. What those are is you basically decouple the antennas from the system and you plug in a precision delay line to the actual antenna, and then you use that as your test. And so you have one precision delay line that simulates the free space without the bail, and then you add a slightly longer line that would simulate the extra delay that you would see for a bail of a certain moisture content. By setting up multiple delay lines, we were able to get a wide range of propagation delays and very accurately test the actual electronics to make sure that, okay, we have that portion of it down, so we know that that is working, and that's what this chart shows. Then the next step was to, we started at that time to get reports from the field that we were getting situations where, you know, in the south, in the Gulf area, Mississippi, they were showing up with wet stripe bales. And so we wanted to come up with a way that would allow us to detect bales that weren't uniformly wet, but just wet in portions or stripes. And so we came up with a antenna system, a multi-antenna system that allows us, this is one antenna right here, here's another one, here's another one. As that bale passes underneath that antenna, it looks at only that portion of the bale. This antenna looks at the center of the bale, and this one looks at this one. As we're going through and doing this, we can get an estimate of the moisture content there, there, and there, and then all the way down the line, we take multiple readings as that bale goes by. And it allows us to build a nice image of the actual moisture content distribution in that bale, and allows us to pick up the wet stripes. That brings us to our next step. Our next step, we're kind of wondering, okay, how are these systems working? We'd had some reports from a gin in Missouri that had ginned a bunch of bales really, really wet. And those guys that were there swore up and down the microwave sensor they were using was reading 7.5%. And so it was telling the moisture restoration system, which at that time was a spray system, to dump water into the bale. And so it did exactly what it's supposed to do, because it was in a feedback control system, and it loaded up those bales full of water. They ended up with about 40, 50,000 bales that were really unmarketable. So the question has always been, as you push these technologies, you know, along to higher and higher moisture contents, and as the model suggests, we're getting those signals that wrap around the bales, at what point do you get into the situation where that sensor stops working and you start getting false readings? Because that's really what the sensor is supposed to do, is to tell you when the moisture content's too wet. So what we're doing right now is we've set up a cooperative experiment that's scheduled for a couple weeks from today. And we've got 30 bales of varying moisture contents that range from about 7% to, when you stab it with resistance probe, it pegs the needle, it's above 16%. Some are uniformly wet, some are differentially wet, and we'll be testing that this next month. Future directions, as I mentioned to you before, we're going to be looking at moving beyond the backside now on bales and moving into to modules. And so one of the places we're looking at right now, we'll be looking at putting it on the module trucks. And so part of that development we'll need to redesign the antennas to put them on the sides so we can fit them there, and we'll start looking at sea cotton moistures. Initial plans are to start looking at micro modules to get a range of what kind of path delay is the sea cotton giving us for a certain range of moisture contents. We plan on looking at sprayed on water, similar to what Kevin did earlier, and also using steam humidification, because the moisture content is very different when you spray water on cotton versus when you humidify it. When you spray it on, you have free water that has a permittivity of about 80. when you spray it on, you end up with monolayers of water that are attached to the surface, and they behave very close to ice. The permittivity of those are around 2.5% moisture content. So we feel it's pretty important to get a handle on both those issues, considering that's what we expect to see in the field. And that brings me to the end. You have any questions? Yes, sir.
Matthew, this may be kind of a dumb question, but you showed that slide where you had the desirable and undesirable signals.
Yes.
How do you determine which is which?
Oh, it's a time delay thing. You know that it takes, say, 1,000, a signal right here, maybe say 2,000 picoseconds to go through the bale at a dry moisture content. And at a 7.5% moisture content, you're at 4,000, let's say. And so, but you also know that if you're going to bounce it all the way out the ceiling and come back down, you can calculate it, and it's going to show up way out here. And so when you go to the this frequency chart over here, the multipath is going to show up way out here, which ends up with a much bigger deviation. Any other questions? All right. Thank you. Appreciate it.